Hello and welcome back to the Style Stories podcast. I'm your host, personal stylist Lisa Gilby, and this is the podcast that talks about everything to do with style, image and fashion for those of us over 40. So we've just literally come out of lockdown 2 in London, UK. I'm sitting here today. It's a Thursday afternoon. It's absolutely pouring with rain. This is the first day that the pubs and non-essential shops have reopened, and it's looking a bit festive all around the streets. People are starting to put their Christmas decorations up a bit earlier. I think everyone feels like they need a bit of sparkle and a bit of cheer this year. I'm going to be putting my own Christmas decorations up on Sunday. My tree, we're going to pick it up, and all the fairy lights on the front of the house. I'm going a bit to town this year because I just feel like I really need it. So I hope you're all safe and well listening to this today. And this week I'm joined by Tanya Rose Mellis, and she is aka the Mess Goddess. So part of what I do, a huge part of what I do, is decluttering wardrobes for people and organizing them and getting rid of the stuff that they don't need that no longer serves them. Tanya is a professional home declutterer. She originally hails from Australia, so she approaches it in a different way. So when I approach my declutter of wardrobe, I'm actually styling the client as well and looking at the clothes that work for them and their lifestyle and their goals. She's reorganizing their home and getting rid of things that don't work, but also just making sure that everything works really smoothly and looks beautiful. So she styles the home as well, so it looks beautiful. And she was really, really funny. We had a great chat yesterday, and there might be a little bit of swearing in this podcast, nothing major, but we did have a laugh. And something that really was a bit of a revelation, I have spoken to other declutterers on this podcast, but it's interesting how we all have a different perspective on things. And she uses a lot of Japanese techniques, which was really interesting. But also she even talked about how decluttering your bedroom and making it like a five-star hotel can make you have more sex. I bet you never thought of that. It actually improves your sex life. It improves relationships. And yes, this is the podcast for all things style, image and fashion, but we do talk about health on here as well. And you know, decluttering is part of what I do too, so I'm definitely interested in this subject. And it's fascinating from a psychological point of view as well, because we do tend to hold on to things. It's about feeling safe, holding on to things that don't actually serve us anymore and we don't need anymore. So she's got some great tips. I really hope you enjoy the episode today. So today on the podcast, I am welcoming Tanya Rose Mellis, and she is the founder and owner of The Mess Goddess, which is a home decluttering business. I love the name, The Mess Goddess. So welcome, Tanya. Thank you for joining me today.
Hi, Lisa. Thanks for inviting me along.
No problem. Could you give us a little background on how you started your business and, you know, what led you really? Why did you want to become a home declutterer, and how long ago did you start the business?
A bit of background on that. There's a few different paths that led me to where I am now, but I suppose the most recent was I have a 13-year-old daughter, and before I had her I was working for Savills in property, and I was showing these very expensive apartments to purchasers, and my head was always thinking, oh my gosh, how have they done this? Why didn't they put the utility room here? Or why haven't they put a plug there for the television? And why didn't they put drawers there? And so I started to notice that there was a real problem in, you know, that you had to pay a lot of money for property, but you weren't getting practical things. And I was constantly thinking about the spatial design of it. And then other than that, I have ADHD, which a lot of my clients are very surprised to hear about. So I feel as though that over the years, for me to be comfortable, I became more and more organized to deal with my ADHD. And now I pass that experience on to my clients and it's a real experience. I've lived it, you know.
Well, that's really interesting. So you think that was like a bit of a coping mechanism then, for the ADHD, the fact that you like to control and be tidy?
Absolutely. One of the, you know, the way ADHD affects some people, one of the things is they find it very difficult to multitask, and procrastination is a really huge thing, and just, you know, organizing their time and to do things, so they can get very disorganized very quickly. And that causes, as you know, as we all know, when we're busy and get like that, it's very, can be very distressing for people. So yeah, I looked for coping mechanisms for that not to happen. And that was in a nutshell, and we can come back to this if you want to talk about it later, Lisa, is to simplify my life. And that's
right. Yeah, to simplify. So I think it was 14 years ago you started the Mess Goddess, was it?
Oh, yes, it was about 14 years ago, exactly. And I didn't even know it was a business at the time. I just knew that I was always going into people's homes and organizing for them and tidying, even if they didn't ask me to. In fact, it was a bit crazy and strange at first. I remember one situation visiting a friend in Holland and being in her kitchen, and she had one of these little baskets with all her cutlery in it on the countertop, and I sorted it all out, and all in the same color, and the forks all together, and knives. And then I went, oh my God, what have I done? Maybe she doesn't want this. And so anyways, that was an example, and she was happy with it, but that's an example I was always doing, and people were always helping me. And then when I was looking for, I didn't want to go back to work for a company after I had my daughter. I wanted to do my own thing, and I wanted to do something I loved and that I was good at. And all my friends said interior design, styling, organizing, and then I just started the business and made it up as I went along.
Well, I think it's something that's going to take off more. I mean, we're sort of more, like you've said to me before when we've had chats before, is that America's sort of a bit ahead of us in the service industry kind of mindset thing. Do you know what I mean? Like the Brits kind of are a little bit behind in that. But I think now we're moving more into that service-based mindset and requirement, and people are more open to doing this kind of thing.
Absolutely. I've worked a lot in Los Angeles. I still have clients in Los Angeles, and I lived there for a couple of years, and I really noticed the difference from organizing in the UK, then living in LA and doing it there, and then of course coming back. But like you say, it has everything to do with the service industry there. It is actually a wonderful thing to be able to say to your friends, I've got an organizer, and people are like, oh wow, how fantastic. And it's, you know, they're very practical people, where I found when I started here, people were embarrassed, they didn't want you to see their house, they were ashamed. And what I found really interesting going back then, I just thought, isn't everybody busy? Isn't everybody going to get messy? So I think people here took it really personal that they were the only people that had that issue, where I think everybody just gets busy in this society. But anyway, in the last few years, as you know, in the UK, it's become very popular, and there are a lot of declutterers around that tidy, which is sort of one of the things that I do with my business as well. And it's and like you say, that people are much more accepting and open to it.
Well, I mean, I've been looking at, you know, some of the industries that are absolutely booming now is things like coaching. So kind of like, you know, whereas like a few years ago, who would dream of having a coach? Only really top business people. Do you know what I mean? And that's kind of changing now. So I think it's really, really, you know, a lot more people are open to that kind of thing. A lot more people are open to having someone in their house to organise, because that would have felt quite decadent, I guess, a few years ago. Unless you're in the upper, you know, and the same with me, people are hiring, you know, people thought years ago, a personal stylist, why would I have a personal stylist? That's what celebrities do, right? Mm. So, you know, I'm just a normal person. I'm not going to hire a personal stylist. But now it's like sort of I'm part of people's team. So if people are a lawyer or a banker or whatever, or they're an entrepreneur and they're really, really busy, this is providing a service, a service-based industry again, to take away a lot of stress and a lot of pressure, so they can, you know, as our lives actually get busier.
Yeah, absolutely. See, if we look back a few decades ago, you know, with our mums, excuse me, I'm just letting my cat inside. Let the door, come in.
Joining in on the video.
So look, the roles, you know, in bygone eras, you know, traditionally women stayed at home and looked after the children, and, you know, men went to work. So I know their life was different and busy in other ways, but they didn't have all this technology, you know, so they, you know, and maybe salaries were different then as well. There wasn't the disposable income like we have. That we have now. And fast forward now, 2020, and you know, people, most women and men work, you know, and there are children, and they don't have the time that, and technology, as we know, and that's a whole other topic for another day if you want to talk about it, the tech clutter in our lives and the time that it wastes for us. You know, in some ways we know it saves time, but in other ways it doesn't. We really bog down with all of that. So suddenly we've got the extra income and we need that support because our mum and dad aren't living next door any longer. That we aren't part of that community. And then, you know, fast forward and like you said, with your styling business, people suddenly go, wow, I don't have a nice thing in my wardrobe. I don't even know how to dress any longer since I had my last child or not, you know.
Yeah.
How do I do this? And I've just got my bonus from work. I'm going to ring up Lisa, you know. Where yeah, 20 exactly. Even 20 years ago people weren't doing that, you know,
outsource the problem, you Absolutely. Know just outsource the problem. I mean, you know, I have a cleaner and I just would spend it doesn't stack up for me to spend my time doing that now. Yeah. You know, where I can be working on my business instead. So you've just got to try and outsource the things that are going to really take away problem for you. So with the decluttering, so just to get into specifics about the kinds of things you do you sort out their admin and things like that as well, or is it more just sort of physical decluttering the house?
The same approach is used, the same formula I use in a bedroom or in a kitchen or in an office or paperwork for that matter, so we can do the lot. So in a way, some people have described me as a house PA or something, and so I use the same formula in each room. And anything specific that I don't feel like I'm the expert at, I've got a fantastic little black book that I bring people in. I don't pretend that I know it all. I know a little bit of everything, and I know a lot about some things. I can do people's paperwork absolutely and change their
life. Yeah, because that's something that I massively struggle with. But you know so we were talking about how House Declutterers is a business that is definitely growing, consultancy business, you know, hopefully my business as well, as people are more open to outsourcing problems and bringing in a service provider to take away the hassle from them so they can focus on what they're good at. I noticed on Netflix there's a show at the moment with some home declutterers. Called Home Edit or something anyway. Yeah. I actually thought it was a spoof show when I first watched it. No. I thought it was like they were actors. And then because Reese Witherspoon was in it and, you know, other people. And I just thought, what is this? And it's a real program.
Well, yeah, the Home Edit have been around a few years now, and what they've introduced in the last year or so is quite new for the market of declutterers in London. But what they do is what I started doing 14 years ago, because I didn't know what I was doing. A lot of declutterers back then were just going into homes and kind of tidying, you know.
Yeah.
When you mentioned decluttering is only one part of what I do. It's one part, you know, I organize, I style, I do, you know, so much more. I teach my clients, I teach their staff, if they have staff, how to look after their food or linen or whatever it is. I'm a little bit, if you've heard of Martha Stewart, you know, I kind of wear all those hats as well. So when I started, I just didn't turn up with garbage bags. I had a huge suitcase of stuff. I had cable ties, I had scissors, I had boxes and beautiful boxes and little boxes and big boxes, and I had beautiful coat hangers, and if I didn't have them, I knew where I could source them. I had label makers, so I've always done that, and that's just, you'll find in the last year or two, that's just, you know, the taking off here as well. So when I'd go and do someone's wardrobe, let's say, and a declutterer, if they were doing a wardrobe, they'd probably just go in and help the client, you know, take things away that they don't want or doesn't fit them any longer, or they don't take it away. But I'd go in and we'd speak about everything, how to maintain your clothes. I'd help you get rid of some if you needed to, or pass them on, or whichever way you do stuff. But we'd talk about what coat hangers you need for different things, and what things should be folded and what shouldn't, and what things should be in airtight containers, you know, what, you know, whether we use tissue paper for folding different cashmeres and this type.
Yeah, you need sort of acid-free tissue paper, don't you?
And we take it even further. We might wallpaper the inside of your wardrobe, you know, so when I finished your wardrobe, if your favorite shop is The White Company or Anthropologie, If it was anthropology, I'd get on eBay and look for antique coat hangers for you. You know, that's how I'd leave your.
Oh, it sounds. I mean, how does that feel?
Beautiful, you know.
Yeah. And what I mean, how does that? I mean, you know, I've talked on the podcast before. I've spoken to declutterers before about how clutter, visual clutter, really holds you back. And it drags you down, and you sort of fail to see the clutter around you. After a while, you become so used to the clutter around you in your home that you stop noticing it. But then when someone, you know, when you come in and do all that and make it all beautiful with the nice coat hangers and the nice boxes, take away all the crap that basically they've stopped seeing, you know, how does that feel? What do people say to you? It must feel amazing.
Well, first of all, I'm not sure how other declutterers think, but first of all, I don't think anyone gets used to it, you know, unless they, and in the case that's a wife might ring me because her husband is a declutterer, maybe he doesn't care about it. It's more of a case of some people don't care about it. I don't think anyone that does care ever gets used to it. It just becomes more and more distressing for them and traumatic. Yeah, and that, as you rightly say, it affects all relationships. And the arguments that you start to see in relationships is to do with money and space. So if you've got a bedroom, so this is how I attack my clients' homes. So their bedroom is their sanctum. It should be like a 5-star hotel. So if they've got little kids or cats or whatever, and that's full of junk, toys or cat toys or whatever, or books. Oh my God, books in a bedroom. What is that all about? I see that so often. What does a book do? A book, you go into a library. Yes, they might be quiet places, but actually your mind is going crazy. Oh, wow, that book's about this. And it's, you know, they wake you up. They should not be in your bedroom. You should think 5-star. So seriously, I know I can help people sex wise, because by the time I finish, how do you want to have sex with little Johnny's bloody toys or dirty nappies? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, and it's not just a one-way street. It's not the men stop having it, or the woman. It's not that it's, you know, the women often get the blame for not wanting to have sex, but often it's the men, you know, the men. And but whatever, by the time I've finished with their bedroom, that I hear that time and time again, because it's not just it's a beautiful space, they're saving money. And don't men love that? And I will generalize about that, because from my experience,
Yeah, I love that, because there is something sexy about going to a hotel room, right?
Yeah.
When you go away with your husband.
Your man's clothes off when you walk in, don't you?
It's different. And so I think if you think about your bedroom as this sanctum and the place that is a 5-star hotel, improve your sex life, listeners. There you go. I didn't realize
that. Yeah, I know
how deep this goes.
What I do impacts on people's relationships, and not only with their partner, with their children. I hear this so many times with families when I go in, you know, that, oh, the kids won't do anything, they don't want to do anything, da, 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 da. No, or the opposite, oh, you can't touch that because, you know, that's how she likes it, and she'll get upset. And I'm like, I bet you that your child loves me by the time I fit. And I like to work one-on-one with children if I get the opportunity, because they enjoy it. Kids don't like a mess. They don't want this shit thrown into all everything.
No.
They want it organized and stuff, you know. And and the other tip I've got for anyone that's listening at the moment, throw that shit out. You know, if that kid hasn't played with it, don't ask them. Don't, guys, you've got to remember you're the one in charge. The children aren't leading this ship, you know. You are. You know, but that you choose what gets thrown out. And I guarantee 9 out of 10 times they won't even miss it. If you're really scared they're going to get upset about something, put it away in a box for a couple of months in case they notice it. But I guarantee, my tip when I had my daughter was 13, I think I've already mentioned that, when she was little, I used to try and tell people no plastic in the house, because this was my way of culling and my way of helping the environment. Because if, look, I don't make a rod for my own back, but if I can help the environment, I try to. And so if people bought in plastic, or she bought in plastic, that shit was out the door within 24 hours. That did not last. You know, I didn't care, to go in the rubbish, I'd recycle it to the charity if I could. But that's how I helped maintain my daughter's.
That's exactly what you said, is that they won't miss it. They think, because whenever you say to a child, right, we're going to get rid of this, they're like horrified. No, I love that. No, yes, I'm not, you know, always. But then they don't ever play with it. So take it away, put it in a box. They won't miss it, and then get rid of it. And that's the same approach I have when I do my wardrobe culls with people, wardrobe edits. And they say, oh, I can't get rid of that dress. I had a date in with my husband in that dress or something. But they don't wear it, you know, but it costs them a lot of money. I put it away in a bag and say, right, if you don't miss it by next season, throw it, just get rid of it. It's not serving you anymore. It's not serving you. And letting go, you know, we have a difficulty with change, with letting things go, I think, because it sort of makes you feel a bit stripped bare, you know. So
I think it's called the sunk cost economy. Excuse me if I've got that title slightly wrong, but it's exactly what you're talking about. People want to get rid of something because they paid £500 for that dress 15 years ago, you know, and they wore it on a special date or something, and they're worried about this £500. And so that, therefore they want to keep it. But that, if you read about the sunk cost economy, it's so interesting because that money is gone. It's already gone. You're not saving it. You're not keeping that money close to you. By keeping the dress, it's gone, let it go.
And what is the dress doing for you, hanging in the wardrobe unworn,
making you feel miserable that you used to be a size 6 before you had children, and now you're a size 10 or more in some people's case?
That's another thing. So that's one of the big reasons people hang on to clothes, because they think, I'm going to get back into that dress, but actually it's toxic.
Lisa,
I have too many things.
Can I tell you something?
Tell me.
I've got a box full of clothes. It's only a small box.
Oh, confession time.
Don't tell any of my clients.
Full of clothes.
Size 12.
That is so common. People do that. And it's just sort of, you know, it's obviously psychological. It runs deep on a psychological level, but holding on to stuff does. So you mentioned before that when you get a client, when we've chatted before, not today, you interview them as well. So they'll call you and sure that they're in the zone. So how do you do that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, I get an impression, honestly, from the first email I get from somebody, really, because I've been doing this so long now, I know if my client is not in the right headspace, that it's not good business for me. It's not going to be good for them, and it's not going to be good business for me, because I'm going to go there and I'm going to help them. And it's a bit like a rat on a wheel. You know, I'll be constantly going there each time and starting over again. I get back and I won't be done order if they're not in the right headspace. And I have to send them an invoice. And I know that in a couple of months' time, nothing that I have done will have stayed. All they will remember is paying this woman, me, X amount of money, and what a waste of money it was because it hasn't lasted. And so when someone rings me, I have to determine whether they, as you rightly say, in the right headspace, whether I can really help them or not. Otherwise, there's no point. And I take my work really seriously. I really want to help people. I want to enjoy it. I want to have fun. I want to laugh. And, you know, if they're not in the right headspace, there's no point. Because the other thing that people need to realize, I don't have a magic, just like you, you know, and I'm sure you have the same issues. We're not going to change people unless they want to change. Yeah. So you can go and do someone's wardrobe, and like I can go and do someone's wardrobe as well, let's say, because we both do that in different, I'm sure we do it in slightly different techniques, but we still do it. That if they don't listen, if they're not motivated to change, in 6 months' time, it'll creep back. This is an ongoing thing that they have to keep on top of it all the time. And I don't know how you manage that, but I offer a service that I can go back depends on how often they want, once a month, once every couple of months, you know, and make sure they're keeping that in check. Some people, and this is a really good tip, and you may already do this. The first thing I do with anyone that's got a cleaner, I say to my clients, we're going to change the job title of your cleaner. They're going to, from now on, we're going to call them housekeeper. What do you think of when you hear cleaner, And what do you think when you hear housekeeper? Housekeeper is allowed to go into your wardrobe, aren't they, and clean, tidy and move things around and keep it tidy. But cleaners don't do that. No. Traditionally, particularly in this country, cleaners are not allowed to touch anything. They will literally wipe around dusty places. So that's the first thing I do. And also, what if she comes in 4 hours a week? Can you afford to get her in 5 or 6 hours? And we're going to start getting her to maintain some of these things. So there are different ways, strategies that I put into place to help people to maintain, what I'm teaching them. And some people just change. They just want it so badly and they change. But a lot of people will need support to keep in place what I teach them.
Yeah, I think people try to sort of manage it themselves until they get to a point of desperation, don't they, quite often.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what I find, that people sort of, watch me on social media or whatever for quite a while and they've got to a point where they just can't take it anymore. They're just like, I just need to get my wardrobe sorted, just come and sort it. And
then I need you.
I need you as well. So I'm naturally I'm not an organizer. The thing with me is I am messy. I am naturally very, very messy. Yeah.
Really?
It's like a natural thing. I'm just kind of a bit,
But it doesn't bother you being messy? Is that why you
doesn't really bothers me.
Oh, okay. So you're time poor.
Yeah, I'm time poor. I mean, I don't enjoy tidying because I feel like when I try and organise things, I don't know what to do. I'm like, where do I put that? I don't know what box to put it in. And it actually stresses me out. It makes me quite distressed.
Yeah, well, there's a process to doing that as well. I mean, anybody that puts that sort of pressure on themselves to make the decision so quickly like that, they struggle. And that's where I usually get the phone call because I have different ways of managing.
And you were saying as well yesterday when we had a chat before recording the podcast that about the technique that you sort of you follow some Japanese techniques because they've got.
Yeah, well, years ago I lived in Japan for 5 years and then I was an international flight attendant for 7 years. So I used to fly to Japan 3 or 4 times a month. So that was 12 solid years of spending a lot of time in Japan. And I loved the way they lived in their home. So as everybody's heard about Marie Kondo these days. And what's really interesting about Marie Kondo, what she has managed to do single-handedly is introduce to the rest of the world what is just common practice in Japan. Everything that she teaches is, is just culturally how people live in Japan. So when I started doing my business, I just used a lot of Japanese techniques and I still do, and particularly with folding. And I hear a lot of clients go, oh, folding, I hate folding. I'm so not interested in folding. Let me tell you, the amount of space that one will save by like simple folding techniques is just unbelievable. You would not, if you didn't see it with your own eyes, you won't believe how much space. So that's just what, and the Japanese traditionally have lived in very small homes. So, the concept of needing to make things small is so much a part of their culture and hence the technique. And then they've really got this concept as well of this whole in and out concept in the home. Now that's a problem which you see in your job and I do in work. That's why people end up with so much this. It's all in and no out. Where the Japanese,
yes,
it is. It's uchi and soto, I think, in and out. Uchi and soto. That if they bring something in, they take something. So this is just, and that's the way I live. When I renovated my home here. And I put a Japanese entrance. The Japanese don't wear shoes inside and they step up into the home. So my entrance like that, and I've got a shoe cupboard built in, and that was 12 years or something ago. In my bathroom, this is interesting. I think we might have touched on it the other day in the bathrooms. The Japanese bathrooms are wet rooms, so they have a little wooden stool that they shower with and put soap on themselves. And then next to that, they have a big deep bath, comes up to here. And I have one. I have a Japanese dip bath here. So you wash yourself with a soap here. And then you hop into the bath to soak. You never, ever put soap inside the bath.
Cultural differences. I'm so fascinated. That's really interesting. Their houses are pristine.
Inside, well, because that. They have inside and outside shoes. That's what I was talking about, the entrance. This is step up, which I have here. It's an obvious step up. You leave your outside shoes down there and you step up and put your inside shoes on. And they do that at schools as well. They have inside shoes at schools. So their socks at school have to be pristine. So none of the, oh my God, this is a funny story. One of my clients once, she had 78 single socks.
Wow. That's like my house. Where do all the socks go? Honestly, mine will disappear.
You know where they should go? Keep them for about two. Keep a big safety pin in your laundry. The single socks, put the safety pin on it, hang on it. Keep it there for a few weeks, two or three weeks, and then throw them out if you don't find it.
Okay, because I have got a big bag of socks.
Ah, get rid of them.
Odd socks. I'm just going to throw them away.
Just throw them away. Throw them away. That's what the Japanese would be, because they have to have their pristine socks all the time. So
she had 78 single socks. Blimey.
78 single socks.
Oh my goodness.
And that's not including all the pairs that would already paired together. So yeah. So she just kept buying more and more socks and never throwing any out. But that's not an isolated incident. That's just the one I remember the figure of.
And something very different, which is Chinese, not Japanese, is feng shui, which is a completely different. That's not anything to do with organizing, is it? That's more to do with.
Well, in a way, if you take a holistic approach to organizing, which I do, I wouldn't say I'm an expert on feng shui, but there's certain elements that I understand feng shui. You may know more about it, but. We do consider, you know, if you have, you don't want lots of clutter around the doorway for obvious reasons, you know, and when you come to someone's door, front door, and it's dirty and there's spider webs, that's bad feng shui.
Straight away, it's a bad vibe, isn't it?
And you open the door and there's plastic bags and there's rubbish and da-da-da-da all around the door. That's all bad feng shui. So I would talk to a client about, okay, well, you are going to leave your shoes near the door. You are going to leave your coats. So how can we do that and make it attractive, you know, and practical? So it's obvious that that in a way, I mean, I know feng shui is so much more deeper than that. In a simple term, that's how I would sort of touch on
it. Which just feels nice when it, I mean, I, you know, I like my house to look nice, even though I'm naturally quite, it's quite a, you know, even though I'm naturally messy, I make an effort to have a tidy house because it just makes me feel much better. But like you say, people have to be in the right mindset, otherwise they don't care. They sort of, they're not bothered about the mess. That's some people are not bothered. It's just,
I'll tell you something else, that when I started doing this 14 years ago, you know, you've got to have happiness and calmness in your house. You know, imagine if your mess really stressed you out like it does some people, you might end up yelling at your kids all the time that they're home. Who wants that? No one wants that. So, but when I started 14 years ago, I wanted to make everybody's home perfect, you know, after a while I realized that's not my goal. That is not my goal any longer. That is not. So if I get somebody that rings me up and they want a perfect home because their husband is messy or their wife or whatever, do you know what I think? We've got two people that have got a problem going here. It's not the messy. But why is the messy person the one with the problem all the time? Maybe the person that's the really tidy one is really anal retentive, you know, is too much the other way.
The other way, yes.
So whichever way you look at it, any sort of black and white scenario is not good. We need to find a balance. So I don't go into anybody's home any longer and want them to live in this unrealistic, look, Instagram account. It's bullshit. No one lives like that. And so I don't set my clients' expectations up to be like that, you know. So
well, that's where, you know, you if you've got family, if you've got young kids, yes, you can tidy up their toys in a box for a bit of a day, but obviously they're going to want to play with those toys and make a mess, and it's a family home and you've got to be realistic about how it's
good. Love and laughter and fun in a home is far more important than having everything pristine. But if you want to use the example of kids' toys, you know, kids shouldn't have access to all their toys. They should be put away and you just strip feed them bits at a time to be able to manage the mess, and then it's manageable. That mess then is manageable.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, people who take photos of their homes on Instagram have tidied it up in an extreme way for that photo. They've styled it for the photo. So
you really want to live like that? Could you imagine living like that? I, no offense to my mum, because she's lovely and amazing, and she's 83, and you should see her house. Oh my God, she should have been an interior designer, and it's so pristine. You could eat off the floor. But when we were growing up, oh my God, she yelled at us the whole time. If I left my book on the coffee table, Tanya, like with her strong Australian accent, come and get the book. She was, it was like a dripping tap all the time. We had the best house in the street, but my mum, God love her, she must have been nervous and anxious all the time trying to keep it like that. Do you
Yeah, stressful. My
know?
mum's the same, interestingly. Yeah,
Yeah.
and I'm one of four kids, and it was like literally you'd put a cup down, you'd turn around, it's gone.
I haven't finished my tea yet, Mum.
I haven't finished my tea yet. Bring it back. Exactly. So it was literally like that all the time, but we're all walking on eggshells.
You were walking on eggshells, and there you go. Now, going back to the time gone era, they had more time for that sort of thing. No, mothers don't have time for that now, to be running after everybody. And if they
No.
do, they have an anxiety problem, let me tell you.
Yeah, exactly. There's something else maybe going on. It's been fascinating. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast
Yeah,
today.
nice talking to
That's
you.
been amazing. Thank you, Tanya.
Thanks, Lisa. It was great.
Thank you so much to Tanya for joining me on the podcast. That was really, really interesting stuff. I hope you enjoyed that. If you want to find Tanya, she's at messgoddess.com. She's based in London but covers the UK. So check her out if you want your home decluttered and feeling nice and you want that five-star hotel feeling in your bedroom as well. And if you want to connect with me, you can find me at Lisa Gilbey Stylist on Instagram, or I have got a Facebook page, Lisa Gilbey Style Consultancy, and connect with me there. But please, if you enjoy the podcast, it would mean the absolute world to me if you would leave me a review and subscribe as well. So take care, and I'll see you next time.